Mr. Radioactive signing off. Get ready for bathrobe spears, broadsides. Coming at you, 96.3 FM.
And you're listening to 96.3 FM, the infamous Free Radio Santa Cruz here in beautiful Santa Cruz. It's June 17th. It's J-Day for Uncle Robert. I'm off to the big house at 5:30. Actually, I leave town at 2. We're going to have a big feed at 1 at City Hall for all you hungry supporters or critics. We invite both critics and supporters. Come on and chow down. You can bring a not police officer of your choice. Hey, dig it. Then we're going to ride up to San Francisco. We can find cars. Right now we have one car. You want to come up to San Francisco, watch me go to jail for serving free food? Bring a car or possibly a bike if you're really feeling up to it. Anyway, we were hoping to have a guest host, Pat Ring, in the studio today, and Uncle Pat has not yet shown his tail, but hopefully he will. If he doesn't, we have a nice 90-minute recorded tape for you since I'm running around getting ready to go to jail for 2 months. We also have our, well, it's going to be, our, I guess, our guest host, our Uber host here, who's going to be handling all the hosts along with Pat for the next 2 months, beggar backer Becky Johnson. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Robert.
So
yeah, I'm substitute hostess.
So what are you planning for the next 2 months with me in the big house?
Well, as far as your show here, I'll just follow my New Year's resolution this year, which was wheat from the chaff, and deal with all the people who will be coming through your time slot to air their views on Mondays and Fridays. And we also hope to have jailhouse interviews with yours truly. So I hope you'll be calling us frequently from the San Francisco jail that I believe you'll be lodged in. Let us know what's going on behind bars.
Yeah, also I guess you're going to be, on Wednesday, you've got some local potential jail action coming up. Actually, some counter jail action. The City Hall sleepers protest is going back to court to try to smash the injunction, or dissolve it, I guess is the proper term. Are you going to be interviewing people around that and covering that court action on Wednesday at 8:30?
Well, as you know, I try to show up at these things with my video camera as often as possible to document what's going on and to get it out on the airwaves, Channel 71 and elsewhere if we can manage it. So, yes, on Wednesday, we go back to court to challenge the City Hall injunction, which for basically we're going to try and get it dissolved completely because it was poorly written, and the way that the city has carried it out has been with a lack of good faith, and we believe we can document this.
Yeah, the injunction, as I've described for our listeners many times in the past, is a way of making even worse the anti-homeless sleeping ban. Now only one instance of sleeping at City Hall can get you up to 6 months in jail, one instance of covering up with blankets, one instance of having a sign bigger than 14 inches, one instance of cooking, preparing, or storing food, as the injunction has it.
That's right. You can't sleep, you can't eat, and you can't go to the bathroom in Santa Cruz if you're homeless. Thank you, City Council.
Yeah, there's nothing new about that, and they've had laws against that for a long time, but they are so intent on removing protests from City Hall that they had a judge issue an injunction, which means that anybody who does fall asleep there can suffer the same penalties that I am suffering, because that's actually the law I was convicted under. There's also some interesting stuff that will be coming down the pike, and you might want to cover, Becky, about Scott Hager's case. Scott Hager, medical marijuana case. I guess Ed Fry is taking that one to appeal. And Ed Fry himself, of course, is a local attorney who ran for district attorney himself against Ed Fry. He ran against Art Danner, our current district attorney, because because of Danner's shenanigans around numerous matters, most specifically the drug war, but the issue a lot talked about was the case of, what's her name? I can never remember. Anyway, it's a woman who was employed by Danner, had some kind of a drug problem, so Danner kind of...
It's Assistant District Attorney Catherine Gardner.
Catherine Gardner. She was kept on in violation of the law, in violation of, in candor in the district attorney's office, because Danner was in the middle of a re-election campaign, didn't want to have a cocaine scandal erupting around his office. And she was paid for, 4 months more salary than she should have been because it's sort of a hush money scene, and then she was dumped.
Well, this is how the take I have on it. Her boyfriend came to Art Danner sometime in January or February of 94 and said that Catherine was snorting cocaine and growing marijuana plants in her backyard. Well, by day, as an assistant district attorney prosecutor, she was prosecuting people for snorting cocaine and growing marijuana plants in their backyard, and Art Danner presumably realized that this would be bad publicity to come out just before his contested election against Ed Fry. So he fired her, sort of. He told her to go home and pretend that she was sick. If anyone asked her why she wasn't coming to work, that she was sick. And she collected pay for the next 4 months. Then, in July, right after the election was over, in which Ed Fry got 42% of the vote, Danner fired her, officially, for snorting cocaine and growing marijuana plants in her backyard. But why did he wait 4 months? Why did he pay her for 4 months? It was approximately $40,000 in wages and benefits.
Might have had some remote connection, Becky, to her, to his election campaign. And that $40,000, of course, is the amount of money that Ed Fry is suing Art Danner for as a citizen and as a taxpayer to recover it on behalf of the taxpayers, because...
Your money and ours.
And that suit actually was viewed as a valid suit and scheduled for trial by two judges, Robert Attic, whom I often call Artichoke Heart Attic, and Commissioner Salazar, who doesn't really have a regular name from my lexicon. Actually, he does, but I haven't used it so long, I don't know what it is. Anyway, two local judges said, go ahead, let's see what the trial says. But the DA's gotten some fancy lawyers and is spending more of your fancy funds to, I think he's spending taxpayer money on this lawsuit. I'm not sure if he is or not, you know?
To defend himself? You better believe it.
Wow. So he's not only ripped you off for $40,000, he's now spending more of your money to defend himself so that he can rip you off for more and not be called to account for that $40,000 ripoff.
Dwight Hare does not work for free.
Yeah, Dwight Hare is the county counsel who presumably is defending Danner. That case is one you might want to be following. It sounds like you are better informed on it than I am, Becky. You have a very specific grasp of the issues, and understandably, because you were involved in the recall campaign against Danner.
In that recall, by the way, which we were not successful, but we got 10,000 signatures. And in a county which has only 141,000 registered voters, getting 10,000 people to put their name, address, and signature on a paper saying that they want to recall District Attorney Art Danner, I think that's quite significant, and it's nothing that Art Danner should be proud of. Also, when myself and others were collecting these signatures, the number of people that came up to us praised us for what we're doing, but were too afraid to put their signature on the paper. Had those people signed, he would have gone under recall.
Right. Well, maybe next time. There is, of course, another election coming up for Art, I guess, in, 98, something like that. Well, that sounds like a long ways away. Anyway, there's that issue. Hopefully you'll be covering. I also encourage you to stay in touch with Pebbles Trippett. Pebbles is a marijuana activist who is facing multiple charges in different counties because she insists on using marijuana for medical purposes, and she doesn't mind telling the judges she goes to, even if she's charged with having a pound here and a pound there, a relatively low-grade but usable marijuana, that she's got some on her, and she's right prepared to toke up, and she never leaves home without it.
Shocking.
Yeah, she's quite a fighter. I worked with her once, several times, but back in the early 80s, she was publishing a newsletter, an underground newspaper called Joint Action News, of all things.
Why people would want to take medication that alleviates their symptoms and gives them a sense of well-being with very few or no side effects is beyond me.
Yeah. Well, marijuana is, as Ed Fry explained to me in the Scott Hager case, the legislature has declared, the Senate has declared, that marijuana has been quite efficacious in numerous ailments, treating them. And, of course, the only block to medical marijuana for the last 2 years has been the same man who is not giving me a pardon today, or hasn't so far, that's Governor Pete Wilson. Uncle Pete.
Yeah, Amnesty International has been petitioning Governor Pete Wilson on your behalf, Robert. They sent him a letter on Friday, which was not the first letter they had sent him, saying that they disapproved of your being jailed for having given bagels and soup to hungry homeless people, and they have indicated that if Pete Wilson doesn't act quickly and commute your sentence, that you will be declared a prisoner of conscience by Amnesty International.
Right. Well, we've been hoping for that for several years. Amnesty's kind of followed a kind of a desultory course of sending a letter now and then, but now actually it looks like they may, get off the pot and actually do it, or do it and then get off the pot. And we'll know more about that later today. In fact, I'm hoping to, for all of you who want to stay abreast of events, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's my phone number here, and it's also an acronym for HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, an organization which I have been a member of over the years with varying degrees of success and participation by others. The main organization that's operating now is a thing called the Common Threads Coalition, which staged a very successful demonstration last week on Thursday up and down the mall supporting the City Hall Sleepers protest, and of course supporting Free Robert Norris was one of their claims. That's the first time I have ever heard that. Actually, I heard it once before about 8 years ago, but since then it's the rare demonstration that talks about freeing Robert Norris. You're going to hear much more about that. I will toot my own horn a great deal in the next hour and a half's recorded show. Lots of issues are involved that are important far beyond my case, and I think they're worth considering. I myself am still in a state of shock. I don't really know how I feel about going to jail. A KSCO reporter asked me that this morning. To me, it's just another day. I'm not even really aware I'm going to jail, except that that seems to be what's happening. So, hey, stay tuned. Becky, is there something more you want to say live on maybe things that folks can expect or stuff you want to... Are you going to give the station a different slant? Is with Norris off in the pokey, is something unusual going to happen to Bathrobe's Piers Broadside?
Yeah, I'm going to turn it into 2 hours of puff piece for Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
Oh, yes. Becky is, in fact, on the board of directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which, as you know, is the group of... well-meaning patriarchs who for years has been collecting money in the name of the homeless. They ran the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and then they closed the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and now they're building Community House on the corpse and boneyard of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, where instead of 150 to 250 people, you get a locked field serving nobody, and maybe some trailers that may serve 20 to 40 people starting in November if they pay $200 to $600 a month. Does that pretty much sum it up, Becky?
Community House is taking its sweet time about arriving on the spot, and looks like we'll have very few people when it does open its doors, most likely in November, with initially with 5 people, although plans are to expand that up to 40 people at the most reasonable pace possible.
Yeah, we're talking a $1 million-plus trailer project, which City Council recently kicked down a $150,000 loan for, a bridge loan to CCH, and that loan was tied up in subcommittee because the folks who are running the Community House project, and I guess it's Daryl Darling and Frank Puselik, weren't able at that time to come up with some straight figures about how much it would cost, what their other funding sources were, how the books all balanced. And in fact, those figures were not present at three meetings that we thought they would be present at. The initial meeting where I asked about them, the figures didn't add up. The second meeting they were going to come back to, after they say dealing with the figures momentarily, a week later, that didn't happen. And then the next meeting of the Social Services Subcommittee of the City Council, which, by the way, meets every, well, it meets Tuesday. The next meeting is Tuesday, the 25th. The next meeting of the Social Services Subcommittee of the City Council, where CCH's $150,000 loan, although they initially called it a grant in their financial statement from City Council for the Community House project, comes up again Tuesday the 25th at 8:15 in the morning, where Mayor Mike Rodkin, Scott Kennedy, and Jane Hokiyama, Yokoyama, and that is no slur on her parentage, folks, that's a slur on her failure to pursue the rights of poor people as she should be doing. Bring a tape recorder. It's always nice to have a recording of what happens, particularly if Scott Kennedy launches into you with a personal attack. It's always fun. They put it on the radio later. That occasionally happens to me with Clampdown Kennedy, as I call him.
Not taken out of context and played endlessly over and over again, you wouldn't suggest.
No. That's what Kennedy, of course, accuses me of doing, and he's been invited to come on the show to dispute these issues that we have taken separate sides on, but well, maybe he will when I come out of jail. Maybe he will do so. Or maybe you can get him on the air, Becky, while I'm in jail. After all, you're not me, and he doesn't have anything against you, is it?
Well, he did write me a letter last week that where he was extremely critical of my so-called behavior at the Adam Darling funeral that took place last month. And It was kind of an interesting take he had. First, he was complaining about events that he was not witness to. As luck would have it, or didn't have it, when I was sitting in the social hall at the after the services were over and people were eating and having lots of conversations all across the room, Scott Kennedy's mother came and sat down directly across from me. I was sitting with a handful of homeless advocates, Charlie Phillips, Lana Merklinghouse, who's the Secretary of Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and Cherry Connable. And the conversation went to Scott Kennedy. I mean, his mother was very interested in what we had to say about her son as a city councilman. And I believe we gave a balanced view. Gave Scott credit for the positive things he's done, but we said that we were hoping that Scott would show some leadership in ending the sleeping ban, and his mother said, well, what is it you want him to do? And he kind of explained that in the city of Santa Cruz it's illegal for people to sleep after 11 o'clock at night, between 11 and 8:30, and it's illegal for them to cover up with blankets. And Scott's mother was leaning forward going, really? Really? Right, sitting next to her was Scott's sister, and at some point she became very uncomfortable and made a very sharp comment like, I don't think for these issues we should be discussing politics at a funeral like that. And Charlie Phillips piped up and, I agree, you know. And there was really nothing more was said after that. The letter said that I had also offended his wife. I didn't even know his wife was at the table. She may have been down at the other end of the table, but the people at the other end of the table were having their own conversation, which I didn't hear, and I'd be surprised if they heard our conversation. So the attack by Scott Kennedy was very, I believe, quite unwarranted. And I think his mother was quite surprised at where he stands on this issue.
Wow. Call home, Scott. You know, it's interesting. In the old days, sedition was criticizing the king. Even if you told the truth about the king, and if the truth was a negative truth, that was considered to be libel. Now, maybe Kennedy has sort of invoked a new version of this. Kennedy, after all, was the king of the Darling funeral service. He kind of ushered Hillary Clinton in and out, and he had the blacklists and the whitelists of who sat where and here and there and everywhere else, who could get in and who couldn't. I think you refer to that list in your letters, and he wished he hadn't invited you and so forth.
Yeah, he said that if he had to do it over again, he would have excluded Charlie and me from the funeral entirely, I am a member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless with Daryl Darling, and I had a perfect right to be attending, and I don't believe that my behavior at the funeral in any way constituted a reason to exclude me from any future events.
Yeah, I think, as I said, this may be a case of lese majeste, as we call it, a sedition against the king, where even if what you say about the king is true and not terribly angry or malicious or even injurious to his reputation in a way intended as friendly advice, the king can take it as treason. And that's what the king took it as, apparently. King Scott took it as treason, and you're on his shit list now.
It's funny that he should complain that we talked about homeless issues at the Adam Darling funeral, since Daryl Darling is on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. We were with a bunch of homeless advocates, and I believe Adam Darling was very much in favor of improving the lot and life of homeless people, and although it's impossible to say, I seriously doubt that he would have had any problem with this discussion occurring at the reception following his funeral. Indeed, I think from what I hear, Adam was very much a get-it-done kind of guy and would not have approved of people holding back.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about Adam, and I know that you might say a funeral is a personal family affair, though I suspect Jane Immler, if she'd been in town, or an earlier generation of homeless activists, might have even crashed the funeral, because this was not a small funeral. This was a major political event in town. I mean, when the first lady of the country comes for the funeral, you are inviting commentary from the homeless segment, particularly when Daryl Darling is the man who has broken his word to homeless people and has supplanted the only homeless campground in Santa Cruz and then lied about it publicly, taken no responsibility for it, and now wants to hold a large state funeral. I mean, you know, it is true, it can be considered in tacky taste to raise a sign that says, you know, let homeless people sleep, when you're going to the final sleep of a man whose father is in mourning, and that is Daryl Darling, no question about it. And, you know, we can all feel for him there. But there are a couple of homeless people who have died over the winter who might not have died if the Coral Street Open Air Shelter had been open. And nobody's mourning them. Hillary Clinton isn't attending their funeral. And so, I mean, there's a question of balance here. And I particularly, and thank you, Becky, you're very well-spoken. You don't, you're much too moderate for my taste, particularly as a member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. So I wasn't present when any of this happened. I noticed that you did wear a button about ending the sleeping ban. Maybe that's what set Scott off. Would that be? You were the only one at the funeral with such a button. I think Charlie Phillips took his button and hid it in his pocket or something.
As far as I could tell, I was the only person at this funeral that was wearing some sort of a political button. There were probably 600 people that attended this funeral. It was like a who's who list in Santa Cruz politics, and Fred Keeley was there, Art Danner was there, Sam Farr, Gary Patton, a number of council people, Catherine Byers and Celia Scott, and it was a long list of notables who were in attendance. at the funeral, and I would have liked this occasion to be an opportunity for us to come together and to realize that time is limited and that we all have work to do. Scott apparently really wants to control events, certainly to a greater degree than I'm comfortable with. And his letter, which was extremely unfair in both what he was saying had happened, which had not happened, and the specter of how he will act in the future, pretty well clearly spelled out in that letter. Does not speak well of Scott and his ability to listen to all sides on this issue.
Well, it's time for you, listeners, to listen to me as I roll through interviews and we get into the pre-recorded section of the show, because I'm getting ready to leave and I got to go do that now. Unless you want to cover the show, Becky, what is your feeling?
Well, I just want to remind your listeners that we'll be meeting at City Hall today at 1 o'clock. Food Not Bombs, or Feed the People, and possibly even Joe Schultz will be providing, yes, there is a free lunch. It's happening today at City Hall. And also, Mr. Twister, our meter feeder clown, will be both at City Hall, and then he's going up with us to San Francisco for the rally at 4 p.m. today at the 850 Bryant Street at the Hall of Justice. There'll be more food by the cuisine of Food Not Bombs. And then at 5:30, it's check-in time.
Check-in time for the Chuck E. Cheese here.
So you're going to be booking your teddy bear into...
I don't know if I want Edwina in the hands of unsympathetic jailers for 2 months. I may pass it on. If it's custody, I may give it to Sweet Sleep Sarah, who has been snoring her way through the City Hall Sleepers protest, if she's a good woman, or I would say good girl, but I'll get in trouble if I say that. She's certainly a woman, emancipated minor since she was 14, and a supporter of the City Hall Sleepout. Repeatedly.
But not old enough to go into a bar yet.
Apparently not, so I'd better watch out. I was accused yesterday at the, I guess it was a couple days ago, at the Java House of hitting on underage women. So I want to avoid giving even the appearance of impropriety. I will now hit on Becky. Do I get a hug? I just confiscated a hug there. Anyway, that's the story for today, the live portion of Bathrobe Spears Broadside, since I hear no objection from Becky to this. It's 96.3 FM you're listening to. This is a twice-weekly show, Mondays and Fridays, Civil Rights for the Poor from 10 to 12. You can call in at 423-4833 anytime, day or night, leave a message, and if it's about the subjects we're covering or even vaguely related to it, we'll put that on the air if you wish, so other people can share your understanding of what's going on. You can pass on your information to the public. I will be back in 2 months, hopefully sooner, and I'll be conveying information through the phone lines to anybody who's silly enough to accept my collect calls from jail. Thank you very much. Do stay tuned to this station. Stay with us, and now you get to hear still more of the same.
For the first year or two, they spent their money back in town, and boy, how that tune from Daryl Cherney, I Had to Be Born This Century is the album, and of course the name of the song is It's Camp, the campaign against marijuana production, if I have it right. I always miss these acronyms. You're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the final edition for me anyway for the next 2 months. I'm off to jail. This is Bathrobe Spear Robert Norris. It's Monday, June 17th, 1996. Today at 1 at City Hall, 809 Center Street in Santa Cruz, we're throwing a shindig of some hot food sponsored by Feed the People. And shit kicker Sean Alini is going to be doing that, along with a couple of other folks. We'll give a few speeches, wave a few banners, hoist a few signs, and then hop in a car, maybe two cars if somebody else shows up, and take off for San Francisco. In San Francisco at 4 o'clock, we're going to rally in front of the Hall of Justice. And then at 5:30, I go into jail, 7th floor of the Hall of Justice. The crime, serving free food to the homeless in violation of a court order, which bars Food Not Bombs from serving anywhere in the city and county of San Francisco without appropriate permits. Since nobody can get a permit for serving food in the parks, Food Not Bombs has been serving anyway for the last 8 years. And I was one of those who was serving, and actually the only one who was actually taken to trial, convicted, and now about to be jailed. So come on down to City Hall today at 1 if you want to join in the festivities. Mr. Twister will be. You remember Mr. Twister? That's Corey McDonald, the clown with a heart, who is running around putting dimes in meters one step ahead of the parking maids, or the parking people. He's coming up to juggle a few bagels, having fed the meters. Now he's going to feed the people, and we'll see what happens with that. I won't be here at my regular spot for the next 2 months. Instead, Pat Ring and Becky Johnson are going to be taking over the show. Pat is, of course, a major defendant charged with the same thing I was charged with, contempt of a court order. His court order says you can't fall asleep once at City Hall, you can't prepare, cook, or store food once at City Hall, and you can't have an illegal sign at City Hall, a sign bigger than 14 inches. All thanks to Mayor Mike Rotkin, whose determination to continue keeping sleeping a crime for the poor in Santa Cruz reached the point where he was interested in making protesting a crime and went to court with his city council to get an injunction against being at City Hall at night. The court wouldn't give him that. Instead, they said, well, if they fall asleep, then you can take them to jail for 6 months. We'll see if that happens. Three people have already been charged: Pat Ring, Sandria Roth, and Michael Cessna, also known as Gideon. This morning, the cops raided again, and those three same sleep criminals were there under the blankets, along with a couple of other folks. I was sitting outside in my bathrobe, having just arrived with coffee for the demonstrators. And Sergeant Clark and his two sidekicks, Officers Chuban and Pendleton, grumbled a bit, smiled a bit more, and didn't do anything, which is interesting. Clark has not really, well, there have been no arrests around the injunction for the last week. Of course, this could be because they've been told to hold off. The publicity is not so good. I announced I was joining the vigil more actively a couple of days ago. In a way, I was hoping they'd arrest me so we could get some more publicity for the vigil, since there has been some national publicity around my food conviction and my they're turning down my request for a modification of sentence on that food business. But they haven't arrested me. They haven't even cited me. They've given out a couple more tickets. But things are pretty low-key. Could also be related to the Wednesday event that's happening in court at 8:30 in Department 8. The protesters go back into court with their attorneys, Kate Wells, Larry Hildes, and David Beauvais, to essentially have the injunction removed. Now, this is not going to remove arrests for protesters, because the protesters have been arrested day and night, night and day, over the last 3.5 months, essentially for sleeping outside City Hall in violation of the anti-homeless sleeping ban, which makes sleeping after 11 o'clock at night illegal anywhere in the city with the exception of a fenced-in side yard or backyard, or if you happen to be in the Interfaith Satellite Church program and parked in a vehicle, one of only three in the church parking lot of a participating church. That covers about 1/10 of the homeless people in the Santa Cruz City area at best, and the rest illegal after 11 at night. One would think this clearly unconstitutional and abusive situation would be one that the progressives on our city council would rush to remedy. But no, they temporize and resist, get defensive and ignore, and in their attempt to crush the very protest that brings them the message, using such excuses as, oh, they'll only all come to Santa Cruz if you allow them to sleep. Sleeping is not an appropriate response to the homeless question. Oh, we can't do it. The nation and the state have to do it. Oh, we spend more money for social services than any other city. Don't expect us to provide civil rights, too. These are the typical responses of Mayor Mike Rodkin. And indeed, the crackdown on the homeless continues. The last city council meeting, though Rodkin withdrew his closing law, which would have made it illegal for anyone to be on the city council grounds after 9 o'clock at night unless there was a council meeting or she or he was employed by the city council as a gardener or some such thing, staff member. Even though Rodkin withdrew that regulation, at the same session, city council passed the placing of a change-making machine downtown. These machines are being strategically placed to disperse what some merchants consider to be unsightly or unruly groups of young people or musicians or homeless people or panhandling street people or any combination of those groups who are on the streets, because you cannot sit down within 50, that's 50 feet, from a change-making machine or an ATM, according to the downtown ordinances passed by Scott Kennedy, Mike Rodkin, Cynthia Matthews, Jane Yokoyama, and others in 1994. So it's clearly, if you listen to the tapes of the downtown commission hearings out of which these laws came, a straight attack on a whole class of people that the merchants want to see out of town or at least moved away from where their stores are situated. And the idea that these merchants own the public streets and can do whatever they want with these public spaces, particularly arrogant one and also a rather vicious one, and I think it's one that ultimately detracts not just from the spiritual life of our community, but really from the commercial life of our community. Santa Cruz was not cut out to compete with Capitola and Carmel on those terms. It's a different kind of environment. It serves a different population. There is a mix of different people here. And the and notions of some merchants that that is what should be done doesn't work. And by the way, I invite any merchant who believes I'm misstating their case or not properly giving them a fair shake in this matter to come on the show. If you want to come on the show, even though I'm in jail at the moment, or will be within a day, I go to jail at 5:30 today, on the 17th, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and there's going to be a regular Bathrobe Spears broadside show, I hope, every Monday and Friday from 10 to 12, and again, the issue is civil rights for the poor. You can get on the air. You can get on the air either with a taped statement or you can get on the air in a personal debate or discussion with the talk show host of the day. And I think it's really important that these points of view get out to the community. If you have a contrary point of view, hey, let's hear it. It seems to me what's happened is these laws are passed behind closed doors. These laws are essentially made up and agreed to. And then they are slam-dunked right through, similar to what happened with the change-making machine. I mean, even the maps on which these machines were being located at the last city council meeting were like 7 years out of date. Didn't bother Cynthia Matthews, but Celine Pascal, a writer on homeless subjects nationally known for her writings in Z Magazine, brought this matter to the city council. We suggested the change-making machines be moved if there really was a genuine interest in change for parking meters, as all these council members kept repeating as some sort of litany that, oh, they need their change, those parking, it's a real serious parking problem, they could locate a change-making machine right next to an ATM. Of course, they won't. And the reason they won't is because they want to space it out so that a particular class of people gets eliminated from the downtown area and the downtown scene, particularly those fenced-off areas that they're not yet able to use the sitting law on. The sitting ban in Santa Cruz makes it illegal to sit not just 50 feet from a change-making machine, but 10 feet from a shop. And as long as they have shops up, they can move people from the shops. But along the fenced areas where there are no shops, people can still sit legally. Unfortunately, places like Friendship Corner at Cathcart and Pacific, also known as Hippie Corner, are going to be gone soon. What with these huge Barry Swinson developments going in? Barry Boardwalk Swinson? Or am I thinking of Canfield? Anyway, all these developers tend to look alike to me. I guess if a developer wants to come on the show and defend what he or she is doing to the downtown, please, 423-HUFF, give us a call. Here's a snatch of the council debate on the change-making machine issue. Lots of irrelevant stuff is brought up, some false stuff. The general myth that's being used to pass this is that there is this overwhelming urgency need for another change machine because people are complaining about getting parking tickets. Parking tickets, indeed, are a pain in the ass, and they're, what, $13? Maybe they're more expensive, but certainly not more than $25, whereas sit-on-the-sidewalk tickets are $162. But that wasn't mentioned by any of the council members, and members of the audience who wanted to speak were not recognized by any of the council members. They got to speak during a period before council members had their debate, but not during the debate itself. We've repeatedly requested Celia Scott and Catherine Byers keep their eyes open on the audience to recognize members of the audience who want to be responding to the false charges or incomplete information that's being put out by other council members, but that so far has not yet happened in any council meeting. Celia Scott or Catherine Byers have not requested that members of the audience be allowed to speak after the debate goes on, even though staff members from the city are frequently recalled to the podium to talk.
Limit our expenditures. I don't think it's going to hurt to have an incremental growth on this, on the coin machines, change machines. I think that even if Catherine looks at where she recommended, I think there are more people who sit in front of Woolworths in the Gap and play music and do a whole bunch of entertainment and stuff that would be affected by placement of a machine there than there is across the street. So I think it's problematic in general unless you start looking at the side streets or something, and maybe that's an option. But, you know, for right now, since we have the machine available and...
was the commission's first priority. If one of these was going to be approved today, that would be the
still is awaiting placement. And it could have been that the discussion by numerous people at the council meeting opposing it, almost all public testimony was against it, had some impact on that, though we'll see what happens in the days ahead.
Any moves to amend that motion or do anything else?
Let's make Mr. Twister come back.
All those in favor, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
It passes 6-1 with Celia Scott dissenting.
Celia Scott, as usual, in spite of Catherine Byers' rhetoric, she voted for putting in a change machine, was the most civil rights-oriented perspective on the council. She was concerned about the rights of people who had to or wanted to sit down nearby and the right to congregate in public spaces and so forth. Not to be outdone, Scott Kennedy, after having voted to put in the change machine, just as he had a month or two before, voted to establish an injunction on the City Hall sleepers. This is the opponent of the sleeping ban, the self-proclaimed opponent of the sleeping ban, about whom we have not heard a peep about alternate sleeping spaces or the right of people to sleep at night unmolested, even though they have 3 out of 7 votes needed to make that change in City Council if Kennedy keeps to his alleged conviction. Kennedy had this after-the-fact analysis, after-the-vote analysis.
If the, I don't think it requires a motion, but if a kind of broader strategy about change machines was developed as part of the parking study or as part of the downtown commission discussion so that we don't get these just piecemeal, what appears to some of us to be random or not so random selection of different properties. So maybe that's all happening, but it hasn't been clear to me. And I think it'd be interesting. I think there's, one could argue that there's a real need to have them spread equitably through the downtown, and that could be a goal, and its funds are available. But the way we're getting it, it doesn't seem clear to me that that's
That was why I didn't support it. I wanted to see something bigger, and I just thought I'd stick with my point of view on that.
Cynthia.
I'd also suggest, since we really do see this as a visitor-serving function, that when the DTA revises its downtown map, that it make an indication of where the change machines are.
Okay. On the map that they pass out. Thank you. I don't think that requires a separate vote. I think people think that's a good suggestion.
We have no control over it.
Okay. Next,
you're going to be hearing an interesting interview that I had last week with Keith McHenry, a Food Not Bombs activist in San Francisco,